Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesenell. I'm your host on today's program, Personal Cinema, Film Festivals, and Movie Magazines in the Age of YouTube. Are they a dying extinct species? Well, I don't know if we'll answer that question, but in the studio here with me is Jason Pankoke, publisher of Microfilm Magazine, a journal of personal cinema. As well, he's got some new projects on the way, and we're going to discuss where we think these things lie and see if the corpse is still warm. You do want to stay tuned. Well, Jason, thanks for joining me. It's been, as we figured out, of course, years since you've been on the program. I should really turn on your microphone. That would help. There we go.
Okay, there we go.
I can repeat myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So typically when you've come on in the past on this show and the prior version of this show that used to be on Sunday mornings, it was to talk about your project, Microfilm, mm-hmm. which is a journal of personal cinema. Maybe just sort of set the stage, you could say a quick blurb about Microfilm magazine and what personal cinema is.
Microfilm Magazine is a small press magazine that I've been publishing since 1999. There have been 7 editions. It's been a very sporadic publication, of course. It's totally been a DIY or a DIME project, more or less, done out of the good old spare bedroom in my good old apartment, also known as the secret Microfilm headquarters. And it is basically a venue of both the magazine and the subsequent website and blog for covering and discussing filmmaking that is definitely not Hollywood, not even Indiewood. It is centered on what we'll loosely call personal cinema, which is movie making that is definitely not made first and foremost for a career, for a living, for taking those baby steps towards Hollywood. Is movie making that is not dictated by formulas, specific genres, star wattage, etc. We're talking all sorts of films, narrative, documentary, experimental, that really center upon the core interests and beliefs of the core filmmakers behind any given project.
So it's sort of like almost hyper independent, you might say.
Yes.
So
yes.
You know, so more so even than films that are sort of made, but people are hoping they'll get picked up at Sundance.
Right. I mean, you know, I think in a lot of people's hearts, even filmmakers who are definitely more into the underground or just very independent with a capital I. I mean, sure, everybody to some degree wants to have their work shown. I think a lot of it just has to do with under what circumstances and how much control you have over the presentation and the distribution of your work.
Right. And you, of course, then have a hyper-independent magazine since you're basically self-publishing.
Yes.
But it is in a lot of ways a bigger project than a zine because you definitely have lots of contributors. You have ads. I mean, it is the look and form of a magazine.
Right. With a, scratch it out, do-it-yourself spirit, I guess.
Right. Right. Exactly. And many publications have followed that path. Sort of in the spirit of the independent press, mm-hmm. The alternative press in a lot of ways. And your last issue was 18 months ago?
It came out October 2005.
October 2005. And you're working on another issue?
I am working towards another issue of Microfilm itself, which would be number 8. Hopefully that's going to come out in the fall, which, of course, would neatly tie in, for better or worse, with its 8th anniversary. So, you know, take it as, oh, he's actually been able to publish 8 issues by himself, or, oh, why did it take him 8 years to publish 8 issues by himself? You know, it a lot of that, you know, kind of depends on whether, you know, you understand, especially the mechanics of doing something in print, because I do all the editorial stuff, a lot of the writing, a lot of the coordinating, getting all the elements together, and I do the layout myself, which I've done since day one.
And you've had national and international distribution of this.
Yes, very spotty, I will admit that. But, you know, I've always had a very low press run. I mean, you mentioned, you know, having the look and the feel of a magazine, quote-unquote, part of that being the ads. The ads have not been that easy to come by.
Because the people making the films that you cover also don't have a lot of cash.
Or even just, you know, retail outlets online or, mm-hmm. or physical that would handle product that would be akin to what's covered in the magazine. And, of course, as we'll get into a little bit, how a lot of different corners of this world of independent media and offering independent media to the public, whether it's on a tape, on a CD, on a DVD, on paper, it's eroding away.
Yeah. And right now, here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, home of the Media Geek program, we're going to have Ebert fever. For a lot of people who may not know, we have an annual film festival here in town because Roger Ebert, the famed film critic, is a homeboy. Mm-hmm. And is sponsored and put on a film festival here called Roger Ebert's Overlook Film Festival. And I don't even know which year we're in. Do you know?
This is the ninth.
And he brings through, you know, it is different than a lot of film festivals because this is really a curated festival, and it's curated by Mr. Ebert himself.
Right. The very basic setup is that because beyond his typical, you know, weekly duties reviewing what's opening commercially in theaters, he does do some film festivals, usually his 1-2 punch, even though it's probably going to get curbed this year because of the health issues, has been to come back to Champaign-Urbana to host the Overlook Film Festival, and then like 2 weeks later, whatever, he jets off to the Cannes Film Festival.
Right.
And with his film festival trips, he gets to see a lot of these films that he then, you know, schedules and brings to his
right,
own
that,
festival.
That we've never, and that really didn't get wide commercial distribution. Although, no. I mean, he really selects. I mean, sometimes he shows commercial films that he felt never really found their audience, or he felt never really got the recognition they should have. And then he mm-hmm. also brings smaller fare that maybe never got the distribution.
Right.
And it's a big event here. I mean, it takes over the town for about a week.
Yes.
And is really hard to get tickets to now as a result. But it's unique as far as film festivals go, because it's not a submission kind of thing.
No,
or a
it's
jury
not
sort
a
of
it's
thing.
Not a marketplace. Now, not that there's you know, obviously there's a need for several different tiers and levels mm-hmm. of filmmaking or video making or television series or that sort of media output. To, you know, the seller's got to meet the buyers, which facilitate eventually getting a lot of these works out there in some way, shape, or form. With the Ebert Fest, you know, that's just more, you know, it's one film at a time. You don't have conflicting, you know, screening times. It's an old-fashioned movie experience just with more
in an old-fashioned theater.
Yes.
Often, and he often brings in some of the principal actors and
the
directors,
producers
here to see it. And you're getting ready to sort of take advantage a bit of the big big movie orgy.
Gee, it only took me you know, 8 years for 8 issues of microfilm. Why don't I wait a decade before I actually try to cash in?
Well, you and I did it together once. How long ago was it now?
That was
4 or 5 years ago.
That was 2003.
2003. And so this is background here is that I was doing this show then, and I think we probably talked about it on air, is that we put on sort of a shadow festival.
It was kind of an alternate opening night show.
Yeah, put on a shadow festival. It was just a one night. It was actually two night. We did a night and an afternoon.
That's
and
right.
Put on some films that Jason personally picked out that you had exposure to via microfilm from
mm-hmm.
One of which was, what was the one with Jim Varney?
Existo.
Oh,
I do have a tip. There's a local guy who's trying to set up a guerrilla show of Existo within the next couple of weeks.
Oh, wow. Well, so for Champaign Urbana people, look out for
that. So when I got the news, I'll pass it along through channels.
Existo was Jim Varney's last film, was it not?
It was his last film or his next to last film.
And Jim Varney, also known as Ernest, as in Ernest Goes to Camp. And we showed a short film from some guys in Kansas City.
The Killing Michael Bay.
Killing Michael Bay.
And then we showed the documentary Horns and Halos.
That's right.
About the infamous George Bush biography, Fortunate Son.
Right. And we showed a Negative Land short called Give Me the Mermaid. Yeah. And so we sort of took advantage that one time. And it's too bad that we didn't together have the, because it went really well, to have the energy to do it again. But so this year, you're choosing to actually turn the highlight on the local personal cinema filmmaking scene here in Champaign-Urbana and the region a little bit more, right? With your with you're going to be putting out, CU Confidential.
Yes. I'll try to give you the very short version. All the issues of Microfilm I published, I always felt for the sake of perspective, that one of the interesting things I could have done with Microfilm to distinguish it a bit was to use stories of goings on from our backyard, from the downstate Illinois area, which is where we're broadcasting from, to look at people who obviously are living in our area, making this sort of work, whether, again, personal short films, no-budget serials for public access cable, television, short films of a larger caliber for and production wise for eventual distribution, no budget feature films, mid budget feature films, and just to use these folks and their projects as kind of a examples to see how these people tick and what it takes to create this sort of work in, again, a definitely non-Hollywood industry environment.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this zine is an embodiment of that, and it's basically spinning off of Microfilm. So, yeah, I'm corporatizing myself. I'm spinning off my own projects.
But you're doing
actually,
it.
I'm not.
But again, you're going from the sort of hyper-personal to the hyper-independent to the hyper-local.
Right. It's definitely has geographic boundaries in its reach, and I think that's okay. One of my goals with this, when I decided a few months ago to go ahead and give it a shot, was to make sure that I could get enough monetary support on this one to at least make most, if not all, of the run for free. And, of course, what that facilitates is a direct contact of when the Ebert Fest is going, having these copies at select places here in the immediate area where the theater is, and they have people actually just politely handing them out.
And so the purpose is to alert people to the fact that there is all this filmmaking going on underneath our noses.
Right. It's I use the analogy on occasion when I talk to people about movie makers, video makers in the area versus other artisans of other stripes in the work that they do. And this is kind of appropriate given that we're in the midst of the Boneyard Festival, which is supposed to celebrate arts within the county, within Champaign County. And I say that filmmakers, especially ones doing independent projects, which a lot of times get strung out, even short films, maybe it's going to take a year or two because it's an on and off process, given time, money, more specifically lack thereof, that filmmakers are more the cicadas of the artists and the creators. Because usually when you see press about these folks, it's usually when they're actually in the height of production of their work, and especially if they're larger films, full-length films, or when the film is actually done and premieres locally. And those instances can be 1, 2, 3 years apart.
Yeah.
And in this case, what I'm hoping is that if people respond to this thing well, which is, again, supposed to promote film and video making locally as well as the blog that I have set up that is a companion, I guess, to this zine, where that's going to have more timely information, where the zine itself is going to summarize annually who's been doing what, what's going on, that it's hopefully something interesting, useful, and fun that people can look forward to every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can it's kind of like the offshoot little, thing that's going to suddenly pop up, and then hopefully people will actually be anticipating it, and it'll be a reciprocal type of thing.
And you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media. My name is Paul Reisman. I'm your host. You can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. The radio show is at Radio.MediaGeek.net. You can subscribe to the podcast. You get the program if you don't hear it on the radio. If that's the only way you get it, or you just want to get automatically downloaded to your computer or your MP3 player, that's Radio.MediaGeek.net. If you have any comments about the program, send them to me, Paul, at MediaGeek.net. And I'm talking to Jason Pankoke, the publisher behind Microfilm Magazine, and now the new, perhaps, annual publication, CU Confidential, which is about the local personal cinema making scene here in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois.
And the cities beyond.
And the cities beyond. Downstate Illinois area where Media Geek hails from. And so the question, I guess, is, and this is the hard, this is a difficult question maybe, does it matter? Meaning, does the local matter? We're in the age of YouTube, right? So now average folks, if you can get your movie onto a computer, which I think, and most filmmakers are probably doing their editing on computers now, mm-hmm. more so than ever, you can instantaneously have a sort of global audience or national, international audience. Does it matter where that film came from?
I think for my purposes and for what I'm aiming for in this case, you know, I can't speak for other people who, say, have columns in dailies or news weeklies or whatever, especially in larger cities where you have more of a congregate of professionals, semi-pros, and amateurs making this sort of work. I think it's more about the connection between the makers as opposed to worrying about distinguishing local work from a gajillion other things that get loaded up into the same website. It's very interesting and very democratic in the way that these websites and, you know, the whole viral video phenomenon has been exploding, you know, especially in the past couple of years. I would like, with this thing, if nothing else, to be able to open people's eyes to a bit, to start recognizing individuals' names, you know, and placing them with the work that they're doing. And hopefully people will respond to this by, talking about the fact that, oh, gee, you know, it's not just
and maybe
this person, this single
out these
person.
Films.
Right. And it's not just seeking out the films, but seeking out collaboration, seeking out giving yourself a chance to be a part of this sort of work if you're normally not been inclined or you've just felt like, you know, the potential scope of what it takes to make a film or a video, however large or small, it's very encompassing. It's very time intensive. But if people can understand that there are a bunch of other folks, you know, in their own little sections at this point doing this work, maybe you can find their website through this thing and go, hey, how can I see your film?
So you're hoping to be a catalyst.
Yes. I mean, that's a very good way. It's basically a print catalyst. That's what
and,
it is.
And I mean, I think I think it's a legitimate way of looking at it, being involved in community radio, which is inherently about community and about the local, even if it brings all of those things together. And I think scenes, I mean, we have seen scenes certainly in music they talk about, you know, say Seattle in the early 90s or, you know, and there have been at times film scenes too. I mean, aside from Hollywood, you know, I think in the 80s, in the 70s and 80s, there was experimental film scenes in, say, New York City downtown.
Yes.
You know, and there are other things. And maybe people don't always realize that there are actual film scenes in other cities, especially not in regions, say, that are more smaller in terms of population and more rural, like the,
right. You don't,
central Illinois.
You know, especially, again, with just the global reach of how you can see films through, you know, websites like, you know, YouTube and MySpace and all this sort of thing. I'm sure to a lot of people, it doesn't matter. You know, the average person who's the average movie watcher, even if it's on their computer, it doesn't really matter to them specifically where the movie came from, as long as it's good and it's compelling
right.
and it keeps you watching. I just wanted to be able to, basically by the act of doing this, pose this as a concept of, well, in our area, in our towns, and, you know, similar sized towns within our region, Decatur, Bloomington, Normal, Springfield, etc., you know, can there be enough of a connectivity that, not necessarily to hopefully build up to, you know, this, you know, a major humongous local opus that will put us on the map or any of this sort of thing. I don't think that's the point. The point is to elevate the communication between interested parties, both who are been directly working on film and video for 2 months or 10 years or whatever, as well as other artisans of all different stripes who could possibly feed into contributing to these things to make them both good,
mm-hmm.
to make them hopefully unique and hopefully have at least a little bit of the true regional flair in them.
Right.
Because another thing, even in the 60s, 70s, 80s, even like lower budget independent films that when they used, what was the term? Smaller like distributors would distribute regionally in different parts of the country. You know, you didn't have the phenomenon before Star Wars,
the big
basically,
chains and the where, nationwide
where
openings.
Every single freaking movie had to open on 1,000, 2,000 right. screens at the same time. You know, it played region by region.
Well, and I think when we think about the catalyst portion, right? I mean, as a filmmaker, you need actors. Mm-hmm. You oftentimes need DPs. You need sound people. You need people, really.
Right.
And there could be a sort of collective aspect, a community aspect. Because, I mean, certainly, if you look at like a film by, early film by like Jim Jarmusch, I mean, these are the guys he was hanging out with.
Yeah.
Who are also involved in films, who are also involved in music, and they fed off each other.
Yeah, and I think like even with a lot of the main people who do work here, like Robin Peters or Jason Butler, who of course has moved to one of the music hotspot, or I don't know if Portland was a hotspot for music at one point. A lot of them, that is how they work. You know, they have a core group of colleagues and friends who form their core troupe, but you always have to bring in extra resources, especially if, the bigger the scope of your production, the resources needed to affect, this decade, in the 1920s or the 1970s, all that stuff takes a lot of creativity and introspect to be able to set those moods accurately, if that's important for what you're trying to do. And, this, this is not really even a directory or, you flip through it and you've got tons and tons and tons of addresses or anything sort of thing. I don't think that's necessary at this point. The blog, that's where, and that's kind of like one of the graces of having digital domains that have collections of your information and your links, is that you can load all the basic info up there for it to be accessed 24/7 by anybody who's interested and who wants to use it. In a case like this, this again is more to be a catalyst to like just, if it comes out just once a year, I think that's fine for something like this.
And so you mentioned the blog.
Mm-hmm.
So then that comes to the other hard question. Why put all this money and effort into this print, into paper? Because you brought an article to my attention before the show started,
yes.
in Variety, about what is it? What is the headline?
Here's the headline. Okay, I would if I could even do the thing with my mouth, I'd do a drum roll, but I'll just cut to the chase. The headline, this was an article that was run a week ago yesterday on April 5th. That's a wrap for movie magazines. The crux of the article is it's a reaction to the longtime entertainment magazine Premiere, which ran in print for 20 years, and it was announced that the issue that comes out this month in April would be the last print issue.
Oh, really? But they're staying online?
They are, although part of the article talks about how the current editor-in-chief/publisher is still believing that the Premiere, in this case, can have an identity and have a readership online, even though other like websites, whether they were related to print
or something like Rotten Tomatoes.
Right, and that's mentioned in here too, just the fact that there's such a proliferation of websites for this sort of reporting, especially timely reporting.
Ain't it cool news or something?
Mm-hmm. And all the usual suspects that you think of now who weren't forces in entertainment journalism or even, more specifically, more academic or esoteric film and art journalism 10, 20 years ago. And, it's partially a cost thing. In this case, to talk about the fact that, especially since the studios have obviously figured out they can do, you know, a lot more efficient and cost-effective marketing through media outlets and specifically the internet, you know, they're bypassing putting ads in Premiere Magazine or maybe Entertainment Weekly or any of these publications. I'm sure Variety itself has been hit too, even though Variety's always been published in the belly of the beast.
Yeah. So then why are you... Why are you putting the money in?
Oh, you're going to ask that. I think it's just I'm trying a different approach with this publication. Microfilm itself has always had a price tag. That's because I have to try as best as possible to not, you know, go under myself financially. You know, and that's just a kind of a tradition for that sort of publication. You know, put it into a store and you try to sell it, whether it's just to break even or what have you. In this case, I felt, especially since the blog that goes with it, the CU Blog Credential, since it's still very much in its infancy, you know, I'm sure it has very little readership. You know, from what I can decipher from, like, you know, the stats and stuff, which I finally got to look at a few weeks ago. You know, it's very, you know, if you have the conception that independent film as a genre is niche, you know, what I cover is very, very, very niche. And I just think that this, you know, point of contact type of interaction that could possibly we can have with people actually finding this unique.
Right. And you're seizing on a moment. This isn't just
right, you know,
putting it out there.
Yeah, sure. But I think I'm good with it because, you know, I do like the Overlooked Film Festival, what it stands for. You know, I've enjoyed myself pretty much any time that I've actually sat in on a movie presentation. But it does not really cover the local quotient of what is movie making and movie watching. And I hope that this little thing and its website help fill the void and anything to make people aware of it. It's game.
Cool. And maybe I hope it does work, or I hope it's part of a step. It is a catalyst, and maybe you were mentioning, you know, a possible guerrilla showing of Existo. Maybe there'll be some more
stuff,
guerrilla and above ground, and things going on here and in your city, wherever you happen to live.
Mm-hmm.
You can check out Jason's website at www.micro-film-magazine.com. If you put a / CU blog there, you'll get to the blog, which is CU Blog Fidential. There's also a link to CU Blog Fidential on the Media Geek website at mediageek.net. Jason, thanks for coming by. We'll have to talk again sooner, especially as we see if this if your chemical reaction goes off.
That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at mediageek.net. The program can also be downloaded at radio.mediageek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate 969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.